107.3. Hello, you are tuned in to 2SCR 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and you are listening to Final Draft. Now, as we get started, I want to acknowledge that 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to their ongoing connection to that land. Right now, I am recording on the lands of the Darug and Gundungurra people. And also, I pay my respects to the traditional owners, to their connection to that land, to the fact that it is unceded land. Treaty was never made with Australia's first people. It is stolen land. Now, today on the show, we're going to be following up on a conversation that I actually started last week. Writing New South Wales, which is a premier body for writers in New South Wales, supporting them through employment, through programs, through festivals, through opportunities to be employed. Most writers only make on average about $12,000 a year. It is a very difficult profession to make a living out of. And Writing New South Wales have had their funding cut. So we're going to follow up on that story, find out a little bit more about that funding, the impact it has, and what this might mean for Writing New South Wales. I am also going to be featuring a debut novel. Really excited to bring this to you. This was the 2019 winner of the Text Prize for an unpublished manuscript. So today on the show, I will be discussing with Georgina Young her debut, Lona. It is an absolutely fantastic look at the artistic life, at one person, at what it means to find connection and to find space to care for yourself. Lona, It's been a journey for me. I've absolutely loved reading it. And I can't wait to chat to Georgina about this incredible creation. This is Final Draft. And of course, we are all about books, writing, and literary culture. So let me ask, what role have books played for you lately? Even before COVID made reading not only a joy, but at times a lifeline to the outside world, books have played an integral role in our lives, showing us the world, exploring the issues that challenge us, and helping us understand who we are. But books don't just emerge fully formed on our bookshelves. If it takes a community to raise a book, and apologies for that bad borrowing, then Writing New South Wales is at the heart of that writing community. All that is at risk following a funding announcement by Create New South Wales that ends Writing New South Wales' ongoing state funding. Joining me to discuss this funding decision is Writing New South Wales CEO Jane McCready. Jane, thank you so much for joining me at this time.
It's a pleasure to be here, Andrew.
Now, I've just given an idea that Writing New South Wales is so integral to the community of writers in this state. Can you give us a bit of an idea, though, about what Writing New South Wales is doing?
Yeah, we have very large programs for writers. We support around 5,000 writers each year. We provide skills development for writers at the beginning of their careers. We help them to find their community, to form peer support groups of writers so that they can workshop their work. We stage public events, including the Boundless Festival, which last year won the award for Best Sydney Arts Program of the Year from one of your competitors, FBI Radio. Thousands of writers achieve professional opportunities through our programs. And we're also one of the country's biggest employers of writers because we pay out hundreds of thousands of dollars each year in fees to writers for teaching for us, for speaking at events, for writing content for our publications and so on.
Now, that employment, I understand, is so important. It's very difficult for writers to make a living just by writing. You mentioned there that hundreds of thousands of dollars get paid out and you are, if not the largest, one of the largest employers of writers. How is Writing New South Wales itself funded?
We generate most of our revenue from our own activities. We generate about two-thirds of our revenue from our activities, which includes membership fees, fees that writers pay to participating in courses, tickets to our events and so on. The other third comes from government funding, which comes from federal and state governments as well as local governments. Create New South Wales grant was actually a relatively small part of our revenue, but it was the base for everything else that we do. It was the secure ongoing funding that we had that allowed us to build everything on top of that. And without it, we don't have the capacity to plan.
What does this funding decision, which will come into effect at the end of the year, what does this funding decision mean for the future of Writing New South Wales?
our earned revenue this year has taken a hit of about 30 to 40% already. Fortunately, there have been some of those federal government assistance programs like JobKeeper that are keeping a lot of arts organisations going through this time, including us. But nonetheless, we're going to be coming to the end of this year facing considerable challenges as a result of the pandemic. And to add into that, the loss of our ongoing funding is devastating.
Now, I hate to break things down to the economy, but this is the language that the government communicates in. Do you think that this speaks, the sort of funding cuts, and we haven't discussed it, but the relatively low amount of arts funding that is allocated to literature, do you think that this speaks to a broader culture that sees the arts as ancillary to other sectors?
Yes, I do. I think that's exactly what it is. And I think that there's a general feeling that people in the arts work out of passion, which we do, it's true, but somehow that we therefore don't deserve to be paid because passion drives us. And you don't get the same argument made about other people who might be working out of passion in other fields of endeavour. And I think that applies particularly to writers. Because writing is such a solitary activity most of the time, and because it doesn't require huge infrastructure necessarily to be performed, so you don't need the great big theatre to do the writing part of the work, it happens in private and in secret, and it tends to be thought of almost as a hobby. And that really diminishes and impoverishes the stories that we're able to tell. And it makes it harder, I think, particularly for people from more marginalised backgrounds to find the time and the space to do their best writing.
I guess my challenge now is to the listeners who for months, we're going on 6 months now since COVID, have heard me talking about supporting artists by buying their work, about supporting their local bookshop by getting out to the bricks and mortar. Writing New South Wales is another organisation that is making sure those much-loved books, those pieces of art, are available to you. You can go to writingnewsouthwales.org.au to find out a little bit more about this funding cut. You can also find some really useful stuff. I've already accessed. There is a form letter that you might like to put your own details into to send to your local member. Jane, look, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know that this is a very busy time and that you're working so hard to address this funding cut. Thank you for taking the time to come on Final Draft.
It's my pleasure, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
I have got a terrific conversation coming up with Georgina Young. We're going to be discussing her debut novel, Lona. There is so much of the books writing and literary culture today on Final Draft. But to get us there, I am going to play us a track, and I'm all about supporting the Australian music through this time. I'm discovering so many bands. I don't know about you. I am discovering so many bands, and it's really making me miss live gigs. It's missing the fact that I can't go out and see them. This is a Brizzy outfit that I'm going to play. They are called Pink Matter. They've got a new track out just in the last week. It is called You'll Never Know. So from Brisbane, this is Pink Matter.
Such great.
You are on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, which is books, writing and literary culture, but we are not afraid to play a track every now and again. That was from Brisbane band Pink Matter. The track was called You'll Never Know, and I'm going to encourage you to support amazing Australian music. If you loved it, you can go to Pink Matter's Bandcamp. You can get some digital downloads. You can throw them some love. It is so important that we get behind our artists at this time, especially when we can't get out and see them live. My name is Andrew Popel, and of course, Final Draft is all about the books. I have got a fantastic debut novel to share today. Georgina Young is a writer and multidisciplinary artist. Lona is her debut novel, and it won the 2019 Text Prize for an unpublished manuscript. Georgina, look, welcome to Final Draft. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure. Now, about now, I would normally start with some sort of synopsis to kind of background our conversation, you know, something about the book, the plot. But in Lona, I read with the feeling not that I was in a story, but rather I was meeting a new, let's say, friend, or rather someone who might become a friend if we get to know each other some more. And I feel like I know Lona a little better for having read the book, but perhaps you, who know her best, could do the honours.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so Lona's 19 years old, she lives in Melbourne, she's stubborn and creative and willful and, you know, occasionally self-defeating, and she's just dropped out of art school and she's trying to figure out what she's doing in her life.
I have the absolute sense that sort of, you know, introduce round with the sense of, you know, getting to the heart of matters is something that Lona would kind of love, hate. She'd love, like, maybe the sincerity, but feel it was kind of, it was just too invasive.
I get that. Like, some people have said, you know, like, I feel like, alternatively, like, some people are like, oh, I feel like I really got to know Lona, and other people are like, I feel like I know nothing about Lona by the end. It's kind of interesting where we get, like, into her mind, but to a degree, there's also just definitely this space between her and the reader.
So Lona dropped out of art school, and throughout the novel, she tries to kind of strip away at the real reason she dropped out. I'm using scare quotes there. And there's almost a sense that she's parodying the earnest approach of art students to the process of learning art, whilst making herself miserable that she can't just kind of intuit the artistic process while, say, pushing trolleys. I wondered, though, like, if there's ever a way of knowing something like that, and that maybe, you know, sort of things like degrees, these institutional crutches, a degree, a qualification, are they just maybe like post hoc justifications that we're just always going to lean on for that legitimacy?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's interesting studying something like art or, you know, something creative like that at university where you're pushed to, for assessments, say, qualify and explain your art, which is, you know, essentially sort of what Lona's doing with the reason why she's dropping out. And she talks about that at another point in the novel, like that, you know, everyone's questioning what is art. And so that becomes a big part of art making at university, but it's whether that is helpful or maybe it isn't. And it's just looking at art from a kind of academic perspective, which definitely, I think, alters your relationship with it.
But it comes to inform so much of the way we interact and the way we interrogate, you know, that classic sort of what do you do? And Lona longs for life to be bigger than, you know, the collection of mundane events and conversations that her friends and family kind of keep drawing her back into. She's constantly bemoaning sort of social niceties as insincere, which, like, I absolutely feel. But I also wondered at the way those sorts of things kind of perhaps provide maybe a glue, maybe a catalyst for those better, deeper connections that Lona's longing for?
I don't know. She's driving towards perhaps forming like instantly more deeper connections, one blessing that, yeah, they can be made up of those niceties to begin with before you get to really knowing another person.
Is something kind of stylistically, you give us that almost psychological dissection of those interactions from Lona's point of view, but you also give us a little bit of distance of the third person. I wondered how you arrived at that style.
I'm not sure. I think I just started writing it in third person. And it as you're saying, it allows that slight distance. So we get a kind of slightly more knowing narration of the story than perhaps Lona herself would tell. It's almost like just slightly looking back and able to evaluate the experiences. Yeah, I don't know. I think I like that distance and that layer between what the reader gets and what Lona is actually experiencing. So we have just like a little better perspective on what's happening.
Your writing style is strikingly visual. And I've got to admit, there was this one scene. So Lona's on a date with George. He's nice, maybe a little clingy. But I actually misread. I misread a line as, this is my misreading. Lona is wearing a top hat with Leia Organa on it. Now, that's not what she's wearing. But when I read that, I thought, that's an interesting look. But it didn't at all seem out of place to me, even though I got it wrong, because that's what Lona, how she was being evoked for me. And it got me wondering about Lona's visual presence and how it precedes her and how that influences the way that people interact with her.
Yeah, I think it is quite a visual novel. Like, despite the fact that I don't really tend to write, I've never really felt like a kind of like scenery landscape writer. I tend to go for, I guess, more dialogue, particularly here. It's like quite a sparsely written novel, but I think just the fact that she is like, she's into art and aesthetics, and that sort of then bleeds into the way she looks at the world. And so for her, a lot of it as well, a lot of constructing her own persona is in the way she presents herself. And so that, you know, we get that in her hair and her outfit. So her outfit's often described in scenes, and that, I guess, lends itself to a more visual representation.
Yeah, and I think what you've managed to do is be very visual in that sparse way, because, of course, that scene comes along, and I don't know that you have given us a lot of visual description of Lona, but you've given enough that I was able to build up kind of a presence in my mind, and top hat or no... Because, I mean, she's
just.
She should
have been a top hat. That would have been great.
She's not wearing a top hat. let alone a top hat with Leia on it, which would be fantastic. Yeah. I don't know whether it would be a picture of Leia or just the very famous buns sort of sitting on either side of the top hat. But you allow us to kind of confirm little pieces of our hunches. And even things like George. George plays in a band. The band are called Hello Hello, which is sort of named for the Cat Empire song, which is just like, that song's got to be pushing 20 years old now. But straight away, I knew what the band looked like. I know what George looks like. And I can see them at the club, even though it's a good 6 months since any of us have been to a club. Here's a little quote. Here's a little quote without context, because it was just, it was so meaningful to me. She's barely touching it, barely any place long enough to make an impact. It sort of speaks to that impermanence that Lona feels. And I was never quite sure whether Lona was comfortable with this impermanence and this sort of constant to-ing and fro-ing, trying to figure herself out.
Yeah, I feel like she is searching for something that will make her feel... You know, she says, you know, like when she's pushing around trolleys and whatever, she's okay with it because she doesn't expect it to make her feel whole. But I think, and so she's willing to have that kind of existence for the time being where she's just, you know, doing something and at least she has something to do. But I think she's searching for the thing that will make her happy and make her feel fulfilled. But she doesn't know how to achieve that because I think her sort of ambitions lie outside of that usual work experience kind of thing. And so she doesn't really know how to achieve it and how to maintain it, I guess, like in her life, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to continue to be deliberately vague about that quote because for the point that it comes in the book, for me, just made it so incredibly beautiful and it made so much about Lona and what I'd been reading of her experience really beautiful. But I guess at different points in the book, it could have meant different things. But to me, it spoke of freedom as well. Mm. And having that freedom that you can move around and try things and feel like you can, you know, make mistakes because you can move on from them. You know, barely touching, barely making an impact. Yeah, I liked the way it spoke to, I guess, a sense of freedom. Loner also does worry, though. I mean, I'm going to counterpoint everything I just said. So Loner also worries that others won't understand her. And there's another point where she says, what she talks about her need to hoard herself for herself. And at this point in the book, we've learnt, you know, that Loner can be, she can brush people off, she can seem maybe a little cold, but that she's doing it because of the way she feels and what she needs. And I wondered there, like, what are the costs of that self-care and putting yourself first? And also, what are those costs, especially for a woman?
Yeah, I think that's sort of at the kind of crux of the novel. It's the idea of a person who is a introverted person, a person who likes being alone and finds it creatively stimulating, and also just important to their sense of self and their ability to, I think, really function in their life. But then also trying to maintain relationships in their life, you know, friendships and family and romantic kind of relationships. So it's that tension that she feels. But I think particularly, like, for a woman, but also for a woman who's trying to do something in, like, a creative arena, a creative life, I think it's inherently kind of a selfish life, because that is the thing that you, that absorbs your time and absorbs your thoughts and your feelings. And it's something that you, you know, like her art, or it could be writing, it could be anything, that it's an alone thing, but it's not necessarily a lonely thing. Mm. And she, I think, is trying to live as authentically close to herself and what she wants to do, which is, in a way, that is selfish, to live for yourself. But it can have, it can be beneficial for creative practice. But it's just walking, and she's walking that line, deciding how far she wants to push it and how far she is willing to go with or abandon sociability. And so, yeah, I don't know if it has, like, an answer, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, but it's just showing what it means to choose yourself and how that can impact on what you do and on the people in your life.
So I couldn't help but notice in your acknowledgements the mention of a horror novel. And obviously it hasn't made it, it hasn't met the world yet. But I was wondering if you could talk there about that process of letting go of art, like being creative, but also letting some of it go. I mean, in the book, Loner talks about being sick of her own work, and she says, don't do the same thing twice, make so that you don't have to make again. And I feel like that's probably one of the hardest things in being creative, is that every creative outlet isn't going to be, you know, ready for the world.
Yeah. So Loner wasn't the first novel that I wrote. Like, I've been writing books since I was in high school. And so it's just like been like a variety of projects I've started, some I've finished. And when I was at, when I was studying creative writing at uni, I wrote, it was when I really started to be like, okay, if I'm going to make this the thing that I do, I'm going to have to, you know, work on it every single day. And I got into like a really good routine, and I ended up writing what I intended to be a psychological thriller, but was in fact a horror novel, which I realized once I gave it to a friend to read, and she was horrified. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, I think I always just feel like I am eventually going to come back to everything I have started. But with Loner, it was like one of the first ones that I'd written, which I thought that it was doing exactly what I wanted it to do. And so I was like, okay, well, this one is ready.
Is that first novel then part of a process? Like, is it okay to let go of some art?
I think so, definitely. I guess it really depends. It depends, like, sometimes you can go back to old work and find new ways of doing it. Yeah, I guess it really does depend. I don't know. I even find with Loner at the moment, I feel like, oh yeah, it's done, but it's kind of done, but it's just now taking off because now people are reading it. So it's a kind of bizarre experience to then go back into it again.
Look, before we finish up, and since we are talking about Lona as if she's actually just popped down to the shops and could be back at any minute, how do you think Lona is going right now? Like, is Lona doing okay in lockdown?
Probably she's doing all right, but maybe, I don't know, I feel like with everyone now, there's a degree to it. I feel like when we first went into lockdown, there was sort of almost a push to be even more sociable than before. It was like everybody catch up on Zoom, everybody do everything, but which I don't think she would have enjoyed very much. But, yeah, it could be good. As long as she had something to do and something to actually fill her days, if she was happy making art, doing something to occupy her time so that she wasn't just endlessly sort of spiraling inwardly, questioning the meaning of her life, then I think she'll be fine.
Awesome. I'm really glad to know that she's doing fine. I'm speaking with Georgina Young, and we are discussing Lona. Her book is Lona. It's L-O-N-E-R, and her character is Lona, L-O-N-A. So make sure when you are ordering it from your local bookstore to be delivered to your door to comfort you in self-isolation that you get the right spelling. Georgina, look, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Want access to free concert tickets, movies, music and more? Become a 2SER supporter. Head to 2SER.com/support and click the supporter button to sign up. Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3, and my name is Andrew Popel. This is Final Draft, which is books, writing, and literary culture. And today, we have very much gone into that process of art, of creativity, and the culture that makes the books that we love possible. I want to say thank you to Jane McCready. Jane is the CEO of Writing New South Wales. Now, today on the show, we discussed the funding cuts that are putting a lot of Writing New South Wales work in jeopardy. If you want to find out a little bit more about that, if you want to discover more and maybe get involved, go to writingnewsouthwales.org.au. I want to also say thank you to Georgina Young. Georgina's debut novel is Lona. It won the text prize for an unpublished manuscript. I had such a great conversation with Georgina, and as always, there was more to that conversation than makes it to air. You can go to the Final Draft podcast. It is the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Look for Great Conversations wherever you get your podcasts. And you can hear a little bit more from Georgina. You can hear more than 100 podcasts that are available. Give us a rating. Leave a comment. I'd love to hear from you. My name is Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more Final Draft. Till then, happy reading. I hope you just have an amazing week. Bye now.